Hello and welcome to the Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology's presentation on managing inflammation with dietary fats and other nutrients. I'm Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and I'm excited to be here to talk to you about the importance of fats in managing inflammation. And as you know, inflammation is an underlying cause of just about every disease condition there is, at least every disease with an itis, right? So colitis and gastritis and encephalitis and arthritis and myositis, and there's lots of them. And inflammation underlies all of that. Inflammation also underlies conditions like heart disease and cancer, certainly, and diabetes and high blood pressure and strokes and a whole lot more. So it's really important for you as you're working with clients to understand how the inflammation gets managed. And it's very manageable using nutrition, with in particular emphasis on the fats. And I just want to kind of take fats out of the doghouse, because there's a lot of bad press about fats, that we shouldn't be eating fats, that fats are bad for us, when in reality, it's the quality of the fat and somewhat the quantity, but not as much quantity as quality. Quality is the most important thing. And as we learned in our previous introduction to fats and detail about fats, we learned about how the fats are structured and what they do in the body, and that we really, really need them. Eliminating fat completely from your diet, it's a huge mistake. And you might see some clients that come in that have been on an extremely low-fat diet for a long time because they read that that was good for them, or they took it to an extreme, and you'll find lots of different problems. We'll talk about more. So before I begin, just make sure that all of the information that I'm sharing isn't intended as medical advice. And when you share it with your clients, it's not intended as medical advice. It's intended as education to help them bring their nutrition and their lifestyle into balance so that it fully supports their health. And if anybody's on medication, or if you're on medication, before you go and start to mess around with things, make sure that you speak to your doctor. So let's talk about the healthy benefits of omega-3 fats. And as a review, omega-3 fats are the fats that are most important for our health. The fats that our body, at least two of them, your body cannot make, and you need to take it in from the outside. Okay, so without that fat, you're missing some function. So you cannot go on a fully no-fat diet. So let's talk about some of the areas where fats are important. We'll review them, improving heart health, and we'll tie these into inflammation. And the reason it improves heart health is because one of the reasons is that fats are important for the management of inflammation. And again, inflammation happens within the arteries and the blood vessels. And so people think it's cholesterol is bad, cholesterol is what causes heart disease, when in fact it's the inflammation in the arteries that's actually attracting the cholesterol there to heal it. And then the cholesterol gets stuck there because of the damage. And then the arteries become less flexible, oftentimes because of insulin resistance, and voila. So omega-3 fats are very important in heart health. They're also important for reducing hypertension. And there's a lot of press and there's a lot of research on using essential fats, omega-3 fats in particular, for helping people to keep their blood pressure at the right level. It's also important for autoimmune diseases. Why? Well, autoimmune diseases have an inflammatory component, a huge inflammatory component, because your immune system is actually attacking part of the body. And having the right balance of fats is one of the important components of managing people with autoimmune disease. And of course, we keep talking about reducing inflammation, and that's in things like arthritis. You know, people come in, they have this chronic arthritis, they think that there's nothing they can do about it, they think it's old age, they think whatever, and in fact, it can be managed quite nicely with the management of fats and other nutrients as well. Reduces depression. The fats have an important role in brain chemistry. In particular, DHA is very important in brain chemistry. improved vision. There's an inflammatory component to vision, and so to vision loss and cataracts, and there's very much of a big role of fat in managing eyes and eye health. And then, of course, cancer prevention and support if a person has cancer. Now, we're not in a position where we're going to be treating cancer, but we will be there counseling and coaching our clients that have cancer or that want to prevent cancer because they're at high risk or they've had previous cancer or because family members have had cancer. And fat balance is critical for that. Okay, so very, very, very important. And finally, the risk of osteoporosis. What people don't realize is how important that is in terms of bone health. You know, we talk about calcium, but we really don't realize the role of vitamin D in bone health. And vitamin D is very dependent on fats, because it's a fat-soluble vitamin. So now let's talk about some of the juicy stuff. Let's look at some biochemical pathways. And you know how I love to geek out on biochemical pathways. I really feel like it's an important piece of your understanding so that as you're explaining things to your clients, you can show them a simplified version of this diagram, which I'll show you later on in the presentation, some of the ones I use, and how you actually so you want them to understand how these things are actually processed in the body. So you know that we have essential fats. They're omega-3 and omega-6. We've talked about what that means, what the omega means, what the positioning of those double bonds are. So let's talk about how we get them, what the sources are, and we'll go into more of this later, but we'll give you an overview of some of that, and then how they get converted into inflammatory prostaglandins and other eicosanoids. So on the omega-3 side, which is on the left on this diagram, we have good food sources would be flax, hemp, walnuts, and chia. And then on the omega-6 side, we have just about every vegetable oil and animal fats will have some linoleic acid. So what happens is your body is going to need to elongate those, make those go from a 16 carbon fat down to a 20 or 22 carbon fat to be really useful in the body. So the way it does that is via an enzyme called delta 60 saturase. And it would be really nice if that enzyme was real efficient and could convert all the linoleic and linoleic acid that comes in into gamma linoleic and EPA and DHA, but that's not the case because the delta 60 saturase enzyme is very sensitive. And we're going to talk about what kinds of things can disrupt that and what kind of things you can help your clients to do to support that. So the next stage on the omega-3 side is something we don't even really talk about very much is stearonodonic acid, which goes to, it's still an 18, but it's a 4. Don't need to get into all of that. Then there's a bunch of steps where the dotted lines are in between. And then from those intermediates down to eicosapentaenoic acid is delta 5 desaturate enzyme. So on the other side, on the omega-6 side, we go from linoleic acid, which is our food source, and that's the one we cannot make, and that gets converted into GLA. But because of that delta 60 saturase enzyme being so sensitive, a lot of times it's warranted that you have your client actually take in the GLA because they're not making enough of it. So that's an important piece to understand. And you can actually supplement them with borage oil or evening primrose oil or blackcurrant oil, and hemp seeds too have a fair amount of GLA. On the other side, you've got hemp and blackcurrant and seafood, which actually contain some of this stearonodonic acid. So, you know, if you can get food sources of those intermediates, that's going to help with the production of EPA, DHA, as long as the factors that influence those enzymes are intact. And we'll look at what those are in just a bit. So the GLA goes then to DGLA, dihomyl gamma linoleic acid, which is a 20 carbon fat. And that one is the one where it can go both ways. See, on the omega-6 side, we go down to providing the positive eicosanoids, the prostaglandin of the 3 series, which are anti-inflammatory. And on the sick side, you can go down to the PG series, the prostaglandin series 1, which are anti-inflammatory, but there's a choice that can happen there, and you can also have a conversion go down to arachidonic acid. And there's a lot of factors that influence that, and one is the quantity, the sheer quantity of omega-6 in the diet. So many people have so much omega-6 that they just push down through that pathway. And some people think, well, if enough of the delta-6 desaturase is converting it, which apparently it does, it then gets pushed down to DGLA and then arachidonic acid more so than it would towards the PG-1 when you have an abundance there. Arachidonic acid is found in animal fats. So it's found in meat and dairy and eggs. Very few foods in the plant kingdom have arachidonic acid. The one exception is peanuts. Okay. So DGLA is high in mother's milk, but not many of us are doing mother's milk, and your clients really don't have access to that as a food source, nor would they want to. So this gives you an overview, and we'll be going into a little bit more overview. I mean, I don't want to say more detail, and I've provided you with some extra reading materials that will give you more detail if you want to go there. The eicosanoids are hormones or hormone-like compounds. In some literature, they call them hormones, and others, they call them hormone-like compounds. And they have very potent action on the body. There's a bunch of different categories of eicosanoids. The three that you're going to hear about the most, which with regards to inflammation, are prostaglandins, thromboxanes, and leukotrienes. And the prostaglandins have three series, the ones, twos, and the threes. And the ones and the threes are anti-inflammatory, and the twos are inflammatory. The thromboxanes and leukotrienes are very, very potent. And it's related to the COX, the cyclooxygenase enzymes that provide those. And we have anti-inflammatory medications that people might be on called COX-2 inhibitors. And those are inhibitions of the creation of these thromboxanes and leukotrienes and prostaglandin series 2. So their COX-2 inhibitors will prevent the production there. And that's a class of medications that's often used. We're not going to go into the rest of them. They're just there for your edification. And there's an article that goes into way more detail on that if you'd like the more advanced stuff. So this is just another look, a closer look at the gamma-linoleic acid, which has some very important functions in and of itself, gets converted to DGLA, gamma-linoleic acid. And then the desirable pathway would be from DGLA down to prostaglandin E1, which is a really good anti-inflammatory hormone-like substance. And then the toxic pathway is for it to be transformed by delta 5 desaturase down to arachidonic acid. And apparently delta 5 desaturase can be inhibited by sesame seed, with the lignans in sesame seed. So the arachidonic is then transformed by the COX-2 enzyme into prostaglandin E2, which is a dangerous pro-inflammatory. So some of those medications that are relatively new on the market, not around as long as Tylenol and aspirin, that's where they affect the pathway. They decrease the level of COX-2. So those are probably your safest anti-inflammatory medications. The other pathway that arachidonic acid can take is via the 5-lipoxygenase enzyme that takes it down to leukotriene B4. And that is an extremely dangerous pro-inflammatory and tissue-destroying agent. So it's even more dangerous than the prostaglandins. And when we'll see in a little bit how the various medications work, that a lot of the nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory medications don't touch the leukotriene side of the pathway. So let's take a look at the delta-6 desaturase enzymes and what some of the things that can inhibit it are. So the conversion from ALA, the essential fatty acid, alpha-linolenic acid, to EPA and DHA is estimated to be as low as 2% and as high as 8% with an average of 3.8%. Although one study did measure it at 36% in females. So a lot of this has to do with the nutritional status of the person because of all the nutrients that are required to do the conversion. And the nutrients that are required to do that conversion are the ones that you're going to see most likely to be deficient in people who are eating more of the standard American or Canadian or Mexican or more of the standard diet, people that are not real health conscious. And that's going to be a lot of the people that you're going to see. So you've got a lot of work to do here. Just as a reminder, where that delta 60 saturase enzyme sits, it's in the conversion of linoleic and alpha linolenic acid down to their elongated states. So let's look at some of the things that can get in the way of that. Oh, and I just wanted to mention that there's a note at the bottom, less efficient in babies and elderly. So when babies are newborn, their delta 60 saturase enzymes are not working all that well. And then as we age, it tends to go down. It goes down quite substantially as we age. So that's something to keep in consideration in addition to some of the other things. Trans fats like margarine, shortening hydrogenated fats, they're going to mess up the action of this delta 60 saturase. So in addition to them having their own dangerous effects on the body, one of the dangerous effects is that they inhibit the elongation of your omega-3 fats and your omega-6s as well. If you have too much of the omega-6 fats, that actually can have a negative feedback to the delta 60 saturase enzyme and inhibit that. Also, an excess of olive oil, oleic acid, can actually inhibit the delta 60 saturase enzyme, and that's not talked about all that much. And it's an important factor to consider, especially if you're dealing with clients who have autoimmune diseases or who have inflammatory processes going on. Then there's sugar. Sugar is huge in the disruption of delta 60 saturase, in addition to all the other havoc it plays in the body. Sugar also inhibits macrophage activity, and it helps to feed cancer cells, which have a lot of insulin receptors on their walls. So there's a lot of ways that sugar gets into it's a culprit in our poor health. Caffeine is another thing that affects the delta 60 saturase. And there's a lot of folks who are saying, oh yeah, it's okay to drink coffee as long as it doesn't have all the fungals and there's all this newfangled coffee. But the truth of the matter is that caffeine itself in the coffee is going to inhibit the delta 60 saturase. So it's going to have an inflammatory effect on the body, as well as alcohol. Again, you know, people will propose, oh yeah, alcohol's okay. You know, it's very good. It's beneficial to have alcohol because it does have quite a number of antioxidants, but there's ways to get the antioxidants from alcohol in other ways. And it's not, I don't think it's worth the risk of, you know, in addition to liver problems and brain cell destruction, alcohol is inhibiting the delta 60 saturase enzyme. Same thing with food additives. You know, we always talk about eating whole foods, real food. And this is one of the other little pieces that you can throw in as ammunition with your clients to say, look, you've got inflammation, you've got pain, and these foods are inhibiting your body's ability to control and manage that inflammation. Let's just get off of them for a while and see how you do. Protein deficiency is another one. And I see it a lot, not so much that people aren't eating enough protein, but because of some of the other things they're doing, like the sugar, caffeine, alcohol, food additives, gluten, their gut is messed up and they're not absorbing their protein very efficiently. Their stomach acid may be quite low. So deficiencies of things like biotin, zinc, magnesium, and the vitamins E, B3, B12, and B6, that may not be an exhaustive list, but these are the nutrients that are important for the delta 60 saturase to be functioning properly. And again, these are very deficient in our population. Zinc is one of the most deficient, in magnesium as well, deficient minerals and in the whole world, really. And vitamins, especially the B vitamins, are very low. And the E, because people are refining their foods and they're eating a lot of refined carbohydrates and breads and pastas, which are deficient in these nutrients. And B12, of course, you know, that comes, we used to be able to deal with it in the soil because we didn't we get it from the soil, and we get the organisms that create it, I should say. And there's no B12 in the soil, but the organisms that create it. But now we're so germ phobic that everything is washed and triple washed and quadruple washed. And so we don't really get the dirt. So we can get more B12 in your system, and you can encourage your clients to grow a garden, but not wash their veggies when they take it off, or just dust it off. And smoking is big time. I mean, smoking affects everything, and most people know that by now, but you may get a few people in there that are still smoking. So let's talk about things that can improve Delta-60 saturase, right? Okay, avoiding those things that hurt it is the starting point. And then it's apparently coconut oil, the lauric acid in the coconut oil. And of course, I am a big fan of eating whole foods. So coconut, the whole coconut or coconut cream that's been made into like a peanut butter type consistency, great source of lauric acid, which helps to improve it. It also has another acid called myristic acid, which is another one that helps with this conversion. Biotin, the nutrient biotin is very important. Vitamin E, vitamin C, the B vitamins 12, 2, 6, 3. I mean, there's all the B vitamins are important. Zinc, magnesium. And these are important things that you've got to make sure your client has. When we do fatty acid testing, which we'll look at a little bit now, but a lot more detail when we get to the functional testing part, you're going to find that a lot of people are deficient in fatty acids. And you're going to find that a lot of people who are eating chia seeds and hemp seeds and thinking they're doing well, but not eating fish and not taking fish oils, that they're very low in the EPA DHA, even though they're off the charts in their alpha-linolenic acid. And the reason for that is a deficiency of cofactors for delta-60 saturase, or things in their diet that are inhibiting the delta-60 saturase. So really important for you to focus on these things. And when I do the tests on people, I can see and I say, wow, you eat a lot of chia seeds, don't you? Or hemp seeds or something. Yeah, I do. But wow, you're not converting. You're missing some B vitamins or missing some of the other nutrients. And then we talk about ways that they can get them. So that's just a summary, and we have a bigger chart of that as well that puts all the nutrients in their places and the sources of the various ones. So how much omega-3 do we really need? Again, a lot of controversy, a lot of debate. A lot of people say you have to eat fish in order to get your omega-3s. In fact, you don't. I've seen it happen. It just takes a little bit more effort to do it from plant sources, but it is doable because one of the plant sources of EPA DHA is algae. And there are a lot of supplements now on the market that come from algae that are concentrated algae oil with the EPA and DHA in it. So, but if you have someone who is deficient and they're not taking, you know, they're not eating algae, they're not eating purslane, which is a good source of it as well, then they're not going to be getting enough. If they're just relying on the conversion and they're not really meticulous about their diet. So here's the way to do it. So the recommended daily allowance of ALA is about 2.2 grams. And, you know, it's going to vary based on a person's size and weight, but approximately 2.2 grams. So that's a fair amount, but it's going to be converted at a very low efficiency rate, right? Remember that if it's only going to be converted at 10%, and you've got 2.2 grams, if you take 10% of that, you're down to 0.22 grams, which is actually of EPA DHA, which is actually lower than the requirement, which is the recommendation by the Heart Association, is saying 0.65 grams, or actually one of them is saying 800 milligrams, which is 0.8. grams. So approximately there. So if you look in the range of, you know, 650 to 800 milligrams of combined, then you're going to be in that range. But really the studies have shown that about 2 grams is what's needed if you have heart disease or heart disease risk. Okay. So since the conversion is very low and it takes about 10 times the amount of ALA to convert to EPA DHA, so I would say, you know, if you're vegan and you don't eat fish or take fish oil, if you add an extra 6.5 grams of ALA to the diet, that can do it. Now, that's not as hard as it may seem, because a chia seed, right? Let's see, chia seed contains, I think per tablespoon of chia seed, you get about 2.5. So you can do this with, you know, two to four tablespoons of chia or some combination of other EFAs or omega-3. So it's not that hard to do, but you do have to be conscientious about it. And adding the coconut improves the conversion. It's said to improve it tenfold. But you don't know exactly what's happening in the people. So you really have to look at signs and symptoms. And even if they look like they're getting plenty and they have signs and symptoms of fat deficiency, then it's a good idea to supplement. So let's look at some other conditions, not just necessarily habits, but look at conditions that decrease or inhibit the delta 6 desaturase. One is diabetes. You know, high sugars and high insulin levels in type 2 diabetics can be affecting and decreasing the effectiveness of the delta 6 desaturase. Poor pituitary function has been shown to have an effect. Low thyroid function has been shown to have an effect. Of course, cancer has an effect on everything, and that has an effect on the delta 6 desaturase enzyme. So let's look at a chart, and let's just talk about a little bit more about the omega-3 6 ratios, because they are so important, very, very important for your clients to have these in balance in order to manage inflammation. So this is just a short list of the seeds, and just so you get a comparison. So if you look at flax seeds, they have 1.8 grams per ounce of omega-3, they have 1.8 grams per ounce. And of omega-6, they have 0.4 grams per ounce. So that puts our ratio of omega-6 to 3 at a whopping beautiful 0.3. Good job. The hemp seeds are a good source of omega-3s. They have 2.8 grams per ounce, which is more than the flax. But they also have 8.4 grams of the omega-6. So their ratio is 3, which isn't bad, but it's not as good. But the thing is, there's a lot of omega-3 in there. So if you were to balance out the hemp seeds with other high sources, like I love to combine hemp seeds with chia seeds, make a chia seed porridge, put hemp seeds in it. In fact, one of my favorites is to combine chia seeds, hemp seeds, and coconut to help with the conversion and get a really hefty dose of my omega-3s. So chia seeds are similar to flax, although they have more omega-3 per ounce. They have 5 grams per ounce compared to 1.8 for flax. So that's why my one of choice is chia, but you want variety, so you can do variety. I have a pudding recipe where I also grind flax seeds into it. Don't do that all the time. I'm not a big fan of the gumminess of the flax seeds, but that's fine. And then they have 1.6 of the omega-3, so it's a 0.32 ratio. So the ratio is a little bit higher than the flax, still amazingly good, but it does have more per ounce. So you're actually going to reach your quota more easily. An ounce of chia, you know, you can do 2 ounces of chia a day and feel very comfortable with the person getting enough omega-3s. Pumpkin seeds, on the other hand, are often called a good source of omega-3, but really an ounce of pumpkin seeds only has 0.1 grams of omega-3 and a whopping 5.4 of omega-6. That puts the ratio at 107.8. Not good. So not to say don't eat pumpkin seeds, but do make sure that you're eating them in conjunction with something that has a lot. So if you're eating pumpkin seeds, if you eat an ounce of pumpkin seeds, and you have it with an ounce of chia, you're going to bring that ratio down tremendously because you've got the equal amount of 6 to 3. So you might have a 1.8 to 1 ratio. So it's just a matter of combining them properly. It's not a matter of throwing out any of these foods, but helping your clients to see. And I've given you a chart, and I've given you guys have the Excel version of that chart, and you can share with your clients the PDF version of that. So they would have to do it by hand. But the Excel version does all this. Plus, I've included some really nicely balanced high omega-3 recipes in that spreadsheet. And then sunflower seeds, you know, not quite as high as pumpkin, but they're often considered a good source, but they're not. They're not good sources of omega-3, but they're just fine to have in conjunction with good sources of omega-3, right? So poppy seeds were 96, sesame 67, sunflower 85. Okay, whereas if you look at salmon, which is pure EPA DHA, it's got a lot less, it seems, omega-3, right? 3 ounces of salmon is going to put you at 0.25 of EPA and 0.948 of DHA, which only puts that a little over a gram of total omega-3, but they are already elongated. So it's a reasonable amount. But if you can get the delta-60 saturase enzyme working effectively, then people don't have to worry about getting fish, which is a high source of lead and other contaminants. So that's the scoop. In the spreadsheet that I've given you, you can actually go and put these numbers in. It'll calculate your ratio for the whole day or for the recipe or however you choose to use it. Good stuff, hey. This is just a comparison, just for graphic sake. You can see really clearly the brown is oleic acid, so a lot of these have a fair amount of oleic acid. The purple is the alpha-linolenic, which, as you can see, is in the walnut, hemp, flax, canola, and they don't have chia on here. A little bit in soybean, so I wouldn't say soybean is a good source. You've got the yellowish, which is the linoleic, which is your omega-3, and then you have some saturated fat, and you have oleic, which is a monounsaturated fat. So if you look at these, you can see that, well, almonds and hazelnut don't have a terrible amount of omega 6s, but they also don't have any significant amount of your omega 3, right? The purple is the omega 3. So if you balance them with high omega 3 foods, you can see that if you balanced it with flax or chia or hemp, you can get some balance, but it really is about balance and using the flow chart or the spreadsheet with some foods yourself so you get comfortable with it, so then you can share that with your clients. So let's look at a marker that's a really good inflammation marker. And the only way you can get this is by doing an essential fatty acid test. And there's a number of ways you can do it. You can do it by doing a skin prick test called the blood spot fatty acid. It's the most inexpensive way to do it, and Metametrics does that, and then they give you these ratios. Another way to do it is the whole blood, where you get your blood drawn, and they can actually test for a lot more. The blood spot fatty acid just tests for the omega-3s and 6s, the EFAs. They don't go into a lot of the more elongated pathways or the saturated fats or anything like that. So the optimal ratio is going to be between 1.5 and 3. So of EPA, AAEPA, which is different from the omega-3 and 6 in our diet, right? This is actually when you do the test. The arachidonic acid is AA, EPA is eicosapentaenoic acid. So in order to keep good balance of inflammation, the ratio would be between 1.5 and 3. So 1.5 to 1 or 3 to 1, up to 3 to 1 AA, EPA. Okay? So that's an important point to know. It's considered unwell to have a ratio above 10, and you know what? I see it all the time when I run the fatty acid tests, and you will too when you start to run those tests. And when you run those tests and you get a real good picture on paper of what their fat status is, it's amazing how much more compliant people will be. So anything exceeding 15 is a high level of inflammation. Oftentimes people with MS or autoimmune diseases are going to be in that range. The average American serum AAEPA is 11, which means they are unwell. The average American is unwell, and we know that. And that's why we do what we do, isn't it? People with chronic illness and disease typically have scores above 15. So, yeah, definitely those high numbers. I'm just going to review a couple of paths that GLA can follow in the body. And that was the omega-6, the goodest part of the omega-6. And I think we did go over this before, but just to reiterate that the GLA can go to DGLA. Then DGLA is the one that can go either way. It goes both ways. And it can go down the positive side to prostaglandin E1, which is anti-inflammatory, or it can go down the negative side and be transformed by delta-5 desaturase into arachidonic acid, which then gets transformed by the COX-2 enzyme into prostaglandin E2, or by the cyclooxygenase enzyme into oligotriene B4. Pro-inflammatory, very, very potent. You're going to see this over and over again. I can't stress this enough. I want this pathway imprinted in your brain. So let's look briefly at that, how the fatty acid test works. And it'll show you, it shows you all the details up at the top, and at the very bottom, it'll show you your AAEPA ratio. If the person is in omega-3 dominance, then it's going to be less than 2.1, which isn't bad, as long as it doesn't go below 1 to 1 or 1. A risk of inflammation, but low, is between 2.2 and 8. Risk of inflammation that's mild is 8.1 to 13, moderate 13 to 30, and high above 30. And this is from Dr. Sears' work, as well as other scientists at the various labs. The index of omega-3 fatty acids is high at 0.67, intermediate at 0.67 to 1.4, and low at greater than 1.4. So this is what the blood spot fatty acid test looks like. You see there's several, it goes through the omega-3s, the omega-6s. You have your food sources of alpha-linolenic and linoleic, and those are the ones you find you're most commonly eating in food. And then you've got your gamma-linolenic dihomo. But here's the thing, when you read this, you can tell what's going on. Now, this person is relatively low in alpha-linolenic, very low in DHA, and kind of moderately low in EPA. But the EPA is higher than the alpha-linolenic. So I would suspect that this person might be taking some fish oil or some pure EPA in a very small quantity, but maybe not. Maybe not. And I would also suspect that this person's not eating a whole heck of a lot of flax, chia, hemp seeds, or walnuts because they're very low. On the other hand, let's look at their omega-6 side. And their omega-6, their linoleic acid, is much higher than their linolenic. But the GLA is kind of low, which implies to me that the delta-6 desaturase enzyme may not be working properly. And that's the reason I said maybe this person is actually taking EPA, because the if the enzyme is working, if it's sluggish, the delta-6 desaturase would cause that. But we don't know. You know, we ask questions, but this is what it would trigger for me to ask those questions. The DGLA is, you know, it's right around. It's not too dissimilar to the gamma-linolenic acid, and the arachidonic acid is low. So this person is probably not eating a lot of animal products. It's very rare to have low arachidonic acid if you're eating a lot of animal products. And I think they have low enzyme function. So we have to look at cofactors. Okay, and then you can see down below, you see the AAEPA. The ratios I really look at are the AAEPA and the index of omega-3 fats, which is EPA plus DHA percentage of the total. So some sources of preformed GLA, which is, remember, the omega-6 side, but that's one that's important for hormone balance and some other things. So we want to be able to make enough of that or take it in food. So hemp has 2 to 4% GLA, and evening primrose, 7% GLA. Black currant, 15, and borage, which is the best source, 23%. So if you're looking to take a supplement or recommend a supplement to your people, the most economical is going to be borage. Now, there may be some things that evening primrose provides that the others don't, and that's where all the bioindividuality comes in. So the mast cell membrane, that's where all this action happens. The arachidonic acid cascade is in the cell membranes of mast cells, which can explode and create inflammation. And you can see the arachidonic goes down to the thromboxanes and the leukotrienes. And then this is the inflammatory cascade. You've got your enzymes. You've got inflammation happening. It's down at the bottom, the little fires. And what we want to do is strengthen your force of firefighters. And so when the omega-6s go down the DGLA to prostaglandin 1, then you get more firefighters. When the omega-3s go down, which they do, to the PGE-3s, you get more firefighters. But let's take a look at what happens when people take medications. When people take medications, the two most commonly prescribed anti-inflammatories would be steroids and NSAIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. And you can see where they interrupt the pathway. So the bad part about this is that they both interrupt the conversion from your alpha-linolenic and your linoleic down to EPA DHA. So they're cutting it off. They're decreasing your ability to make that. So they're disrupting that by affecting the delta-6 desaturase enzyme and the conversion. And they actually just turn it off. The steroids will also be a little bit more potent because they interrupt the arachidonic acid production. So what's happening here is that the NSAIDs will affect the thromboxanes, which are the less potent of the inflammatories, and they won't affect the leukotrienes. You need the steroids to come in and disrupt the pathway further up. Here's good old nutrition. Let's go in and let's go build up our firefighters instead of killing our firefighters. So the nutritional modulation, so we have our food forms. We already know what those are. We don't need to go through those. But you support the delta-6 desaturase. So you do it in two ways. You give people access. You teach them to use flax, chia, hemp, walnut, and make sure that they take some coconut with it if they want to enhance that conversion. And then you look at their diet and see where they're missing. You look to see what kind of refined foods they're eating. Are they low in zinc? Do they have zinc signs? You can do a zinc tally test to see. Magnesium is very commonly low unless people are juicing and doing lots of smoothies. And also a lot of people are low in their minerals because of their stomach acid, which we'll cover in the digestive module. So you've got the B3, B6, B12, vitamin C, vitamin E, zinc, magnesium, and biotin. All of those need to be intact. And if they are, you're going to get more effective conversion and utilization of the delta-6 desaturase enzyme, which is going to help with inflammation. The other thing that disrupts the conversion of from the actual food form, so if somebody's eating some fats in the meat that get converted into arachidonic acid or are present in the meat, the vitamin E and curcumin can actually decrease that conversion. And then the PGA1 actually displaces arachidonic acid. So the more of that you have, the less arachidonic acid you're going to have. Okay. And you want to decrease it. So you see your firefighters are putting things out. You have this lipooxygenase and cyclooxygenase enzymes, and the things that help to decrease the conversions are bioflavonoids, ginger, vitamin E, and of course EPA, zinc, and selenium. Although selenium doesn't really have an effect on the thromboxane side, but the zinc and the EPA and the vitamin E and ginger and bioflavonoids do. So you can see that this is a chart that I would print. What I would do is what I used to do when I saw a lot of people face to face is I would have a little booklet and I had this in there, and then I would give them a copy to take home and just circle. So I would explain it to them in a very, simplistic way so they understood how their choices are affecting their pain, how their choices are affecting the inflammation in the autoimmune disease. And it really hits home when people understand how things work. And finally, in summary, on the anti-inflammatory side and the pro-inflammatory side, we want to be like a teeter-totter and we want to have a balance because you need inflammation, right? You cut yourself. I've got mosquito bites and they get inflamed. You have to have inflammation, but it's a matter of being able to balance it and turn it off when it's no longer needed. And when your fat balance is off, you're not going to be able to turn it off. So this is the stuff you teach people. So the stuff that's anti-inflammatory would be your essential fatty acids, your fish oils, vitamin E, bioflavonoids, the vitamin mineral cofactors we talked about, and a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables to supply this, seeds and sprouts, and I would even add to that fermented foods. And then the pro-inflammatory side, we have red meat and eggs, they're high in arachidonic acid, dairy and eggs again, high in arachidonic acid, peanuts are higher in arachidonic acid. Then the processed foods and oils, remember the processed foods, alcohol, and coffee inhibit the delta-6 desaturase enzyme. So you can see how the dietary choices and what you're teaching your clients to do is going to make a huge difference. And then, you got to support your cleanup crew and add additional anti-inflammatory support. And whatever of these you do, great. And whatever you don't, if they need it, you can refer out. But there's a lot of stuff that you can do to provide additional anti-inflammatory support in the way of acupuncture, homeopathics, botanicals, bodywork, manipulations, exercise, physical therapy, and so much more. So this concludes our summary of how the body manages inflammation using the fats in the diet. And this gives you a lot of information and input on how you can help your clients to decrease inflammation, increase healing, and feel so much better. So check out the resources in the advanced topics area, and that will give you some information about some more advanced ways. There's some articles and papers that go into a lot more detail about the chemistry. You've got enough to be really clinically useful, more than most people know. Thank you. This is Dr. Rita Marie, and we'll see you on the next video.